Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday with my co-host for these programs, Fred Williams, who's the webmaster for the Creation Research Society. Fred, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Great to be back, Bob.
We got a lot to talk about, don't we? Because the Creation Research Society Quarterly, we've been going through the fall edition for 2007. There's so much in here. And so right off the bat, there's a book review that I'd like to talk to you about. We'll discuss the flat earth. Christians are accused of believing in a flat earth.
Yeah, this myth that started in the 1800s where they tried to, you know, perpetuate this idea that, you know, men used to believe that you'd fall off the face of the earth because it was flat, and this was taught by Christians, and, you know, up until Columbus discovered that the earth was round.
Wow,
lo
and behold.
Refuted.
Right.
That's all a myth. It's all a fairy tale concocted in the 1800s. And yeah, this book review covers that, among other topics.
Yeah, now the book is titled, Is Belief in God Good, Bad, or Irrelevant? And it's a book edited by a Preston Jones. So I'm not recommending the book. I don't know if you're inclined. I'm not recommending the book. In fact, the review by Jerry Bergman says, you know, it's not necessarily the greatest book. But let's talk about some of these topics. Now, Jerry Bergman, who wrote this book review, you know him, right? He's a popular author.
Yeah, he's a pretty renowned creation author, scientist. He has multiple degrees. He's a PhD scientist, and he contributes quite a bit to the Creation Research Society Quarterly.
He has a PhD in biology, among other things. And so you go back to Voltaire, the atheist, the French atheist, who pretty much is the source for a lot of this revisionist history, that it was the Christian community that believed in the flat earth and was holding back science. And Voltaire was aggressively biased because he hated God and he was an atheist.
Yeah, very much a committed atheist. You know, you bring up Voltaire. What is kind of humorous about him is he claimed that the Bible would be stomped out after 100 years after his death.
By 100 years of his death.
Within 100 years of his death.
The Bible would be a historic relic.
That's
it wouldn't
right.
exist any longer.
And, you know, God has a sense of humor.
He does.
He created us with a sense of humor.
That's right.
Well, you know, years.
Animals don't have a sense of humor, do they? Do they tell jokes, animals?
I don't know. Some people say their dogs are smiling at them, but, you know.
Yeah, right. They howl, and there's a laughing hyena, but I just don't think animals tell jokes. And, you know, even if they did, they certainly wouldn't tell dirty jokes like Bill Maher or Jimmy Kimmel, that crotch humorist on ABC, because animals don't have a spirit, and they're not made in God's image, and so they couldn't look at their physical characteristics like physical reproduction and the physical waste they produce. They couldn't look at that and find it peculiar because that's who they are. But we have a spiritual dimension. God made us, and so we can look at some of our base physical functions and view them in a distanced way, so that if you bring it up in polite company, it's like people feel uncomfortable or they'll laugh. Animals can't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, Voltaire.
Yeah, well, did you hear the story about after his death? Sometime after his death, his house was converted into something. Do you remember what that was?
By the Geneva? Yeah, I remember. What it was it converted?
A publishing house for Bibles.
That's right. So Voltaire makes a prediction. He's such an astute observer of humanity and civilization. Within 100 years of my death, the Bible will be gone from, you know, among published works. And so God's sense of humor.
And his residence turned into a Bible printing press. It's awesome.
His home, purchased by the Geneva Bible Society, printing Bibles out of Voltaire's home. That's just too funny. That's great. And so this argument, is it true, though, that the Christians presented that the earth was flat, for example?
Well, it's definitely not true. Through the centuries, you can go back to Aristotle, informed people always knew the earth was round, was spherical. Christians, you know, after Christ's resurrections, we have you know, evidence of Christian scholars who knew that the earth was round. It wasn't even a question.
Isn't there a biblical reference?
And there is a biblical reference. I believe it's Isaiah 40:22.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't looked it up, but that does sound right. Isaiah 40:22.
And it says, it uses the term the circle of the earth.
The circle of the earth, in the Hebrew, is even a word like sphere.
It's more like spherical. Yeah, that's right.
The sphere of the earth. And the Greeks had stated from centuries before Christ that the earth was round. They would look at the lunar eclipse. And I'm not saying that the Jews didn't know this either, but we have a historical record. I mean, we have the prophet Isaiah saying the earth is a sphere. So that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
It's in the Bible going back 2,500 years. And about the same time, the Greeks would notice that during a lunar eclipse, the earth always cast the same kind of shadow on the moon. They could tell it was a circle, you know, and a sphere, of course, looked at in a two-dimensional way as a shadow is cast, is a circle. And this guy, 200 years before Christ, his name was Eratosthenes. Now, I don't know how to pronounce that, Fred. Eratosthenes.
Sounds close enough to me.
200 B.C. And he had heard, he lived in Alexandria, and he had heard that in a town called Cyrene in Egypt, which is on the equator, that on the first day of summer, the summer solstice, the sun passed directly overhead their wells. So on the first day of summer, the sun straight over their wells. They could look right down and see the reflection of the sun at the bottom of deep wells. And he knew where he lived, that wasn't the case. And they knew that a circle would have 360 degrees. There's a biblical reason for that. And so he calculated that his home where he lived was 7 degrees north of where this town in Cyrene was. And so then he figured, okay, 7 over 360 degrees, and he made a calculation for the earth of 25,000 stadia, you know, where we get the word stadium from, you race around a stadium. And so, which today would be 42,000 kilometers, and we measure it today at 40,000 kilometers. So he was within 5%. That was pretty close. But so there were not Christians who were teaching that the earth was flat, and if you come too close to the edge, you fall off.
That's right. There's no evidence whatsoever for it. But you know what, Bob? It's still in some textbooks. I was taught that in high school.
I was taught that as part of my science curriculum, that they were afraid they would sail off the edge of the earth.
That's right.
So,
and you know, Bob, it also just came to mind that there's another Bible passage. It's more indirect evidence, but it's the thief in the night passage.
Oh, yeah, in Matthew 24.
And why would that kind of be an inference to an earth that isn't flat?
Oh, the thief in the night, that will come as a thief in the night, and there'll be two men in the field. One will be taken, the other left. By the way, some people think that's a rapture passage. It's not. The ones who are taken like by a vulture to judgment. So it's a judgment day passage, not a rapture passage. But anyway, two men will be in the field, one taken, the other left, two men in bed. Ah.
So did that imply maybe a different time zone, or are these just guys that are kind of lazy and they sleep in the afternoon?
Right, they're sleeping in the afternoon. No, so it implies around the whole world, judgment will hit in the blink of an eye, in a flash of lightning, will hit around the whole world. And so when it's daytime for some and nighttime for others, the wicked will be taken in judgment. Hey, that's pretty cool.
That is.
All right, so let's see. We're talking through that. And we have also the issue of Galileo. A lot of revisionist history going on. And with Galileo, the accusation is that it was the teachings of the church that said that the sun revolved around the earth, and so the church persecuted Galileo. And there's some reality in that, but it's mostly a distortion.
It's pretty much, a lot of it's misleading. Evolutionists love to claim that, you know, religion opposes science. And so they claim, then they bring up Galileo and how the church, a.k.a. religion, opposed science with Galileo. But the truth of the matter is, the scientific community within the church is who opposed Galileo. And so it's real misleading to say that, you know, the church is a religious body, that Christianity opposed Galileo. He had many Christian supporters, And in fact, Galileo is what? He's a Bible-believing Christian creationist. They fail to mention that often.
Yeah, that's right. And the church had adopted this Aristotelian worldview, Aristotle.
Exactly.
And going back to the 3rd and 4th century with Augustine, St. Augustine, he was more a follower of Plato, a Neoplatonist. And then you have Thomas Aquinas, who was a hardcore follower of Aristotle. And the church had adopted this pagan Greek worldview. And Aristotle said that the planets orbit the earth in perfect circles. The sun orbits the earth in perfect circles. And they have these little epicycles when it doesn't look like they're going in a circle. He said, oh, that's an epicycle. Or that was the teaching that came out of his cosmology. And the Christian church had fully adopted a pagan Greek view of the nature of God as being utterly unchangeable, such that how could the Son of God become flesh if God were utterly unchangeable? And then also a view of how the planets moved and the sun and the earth. And so we got the bad rap for this pagan Greek cosmology that had been accepted by the Catholic Church.
Yeah, there was a lot of Greek pagan philosophy influence on Augustine, mm-hmm. and not just permeated his scientific beliefs, but it also played into his theology. He's really, I would say, isn't he pretty much the founding father of Calvinism?
Well, that's true, and sometimes we don't say that bluntly on the show, but yeah, that is true from the Christian perspective. You know, this teaching that God cannot change in any way, that is a pagan Greek conception, that God is utterly, utterly immutable. The Bible talks about God as committed to righteousness. So he's unchanging in his righteous nature. But he's alive. He's living. He becomes flesh.
Exactly.
God the Father pours out his wrath on the Son in the crucifixion. These are not things that are happening now. They happened at one time to God, never to happen again. So God obviously is alive. And the Greeks had a hard time with that concept, so they invented a God who could never, ever, ever change in any way.
Ours is a living God and not some stone idol that is immutable,
can't
change at all.
Right, great point. So Augustine, and he admitted it, that he pulled in pagan Greek concepts, he merged them with Scripture, and he said, more important to me than righteousness is that God cannot change in any way. So if that means that God is the author of all wickedness, well, if that's what it means, that's what it means. But the most important thing is this Platonic idea that God cannot change. So anyway, it turns out that a lot of the bad rap that the church gets for the flat earth and in Galileo's difficulties, part of it is mere fabrication by Voltaire, revisionist history that started that whole trend. And another part of it is a perversion blaming the scriptures for what actually became the cosmology of 2,000 years that came from pagan Greece.
That's right. And again, Galileo was a Bible-believing Christian, and he knew there was no conflict with the Bible and what he believed his observations of science were saying about heliocentrism kind of thing.
Yeah, and he did a dialogue with one of his characters, was Simpleton. And a lot of people said, oh, that was the Pope. And that was Aristotle. Aristotle was Simpleton, who thought that the planets went around the earth and the sun went around the earth. Okay, and by the way, just a quick reference, because this book review mentions the Spanish Inquisition. And, you know, there were things that people did in Spain in the name of Christ that were so wicked, like kicking out the Jews, telling the Jews and the whole nation, you have 48 hours to leave the country, and they're not allowed to take any of their wealth, their property, with them. So these things are crimes against humanity, and there are plenty of things like that that happened through Christian history. But Bergman says he recommends books on reinvestigating the Spanish Inquisition, in fact, because the common version is false. And with the Crusades, Fred, I read a book years ago that dealt with a history of the Crusades, and there was certainly wickedness in the Crusades, but they're fighting, a significant part of that was they're fighting Muslims, And today, with the resurgence of this militaristic, aggressive Islam, it causes you to realize we need to reinvestigate the Crusades to see what was wrong and what was perhaps justified.
That's right. You know, and it reminds me of the Bible passage, you know, things never change under the sun. Because you mentioned this, and it reminds me of I was getting an oil change once, and while I was waiting, I was reading a copy of U.S. News and World Report, and they were talking about the Barbary pirates in the early 1800s. The Barbary Coast. And the Barbary Coast pirates were Muslim, and they would kidnap people. They would bring them ashore. They would try to get them to pay a usury fee. Right. And this is right out of the Quran.
Right out of the Quran.
And if they don't pay it, then you kill them. And so it's amazing how similar that is to today's, Islam teachings and the radical.
And they would force people to become Muslims?
That's right. They would force
them. By the edge of a blade, a sword?
That's right. It's what really led to the U.S. creating a navy. In fact, if you remember the Marine song, you know, from the shores of Tripoli, that's where that comes from.
Yeah, from the shores of Tripoli. Isn't that something? And, you know, today, even in the last 2 years, the news, and it's not like this is over, it's still happening, of pirates off the coast of Somalia. Somalia has this massive coast. I forget my geography of Africa, if it's the nose of Bob Hope on Africa. I think it might be. I got to picture it. But a huge chunk of the coast of Africa is Somalia, which has been destroyed by welfare. The number one industry in Mogadishu is the distribution of welfare aid. It just destroys entire generations of people. Africa's had like $1 trillion poured into it. It's just destroyed the continent. But anyway, so they have pirates off the coast of Somalia. I don't know if you've seen the news reports of the internet cables being cut in the Middle East. This is now 3 or 4 times. Deep sea, I don't know how they're doing it with robots. You know, they've got money.
Yeah. They'll
probably buy robots, go under the sea and cut cables. And so there's really lawlessness going on. And this is, a lot of this is done in the name of Islam. And when we look at the accusations against Christianity, some of it is valid, and we need to accept that and not make excuses for it. When Christians or people do wicked things in the name of Christ, we have to identify it, explain it, condemn it. But, you know, one difference, wickedness in the name of Christ can be condemned by the teachings of Christ.
That's right. And, you know, evolutionists love to point to the Inquisitions and the Crusades, and they fail to, you know, mention that millions of lives have been lost in the, you know, in the last 100 years just in the name of, really, atheism. You know, you got communism and, you know, China with their over 50 million deaths attributable to Mao Zedong. You've got 40 million deaths attributable to Stalin. These are all men who believed in evolution. They were proponents of Darwin. In fact, Social Darwinism. In China, reading Darwin's book was required by the government. And again, Stalin was big into Darwinism.
Nazi Germany
has its roots all the way back to Ernst Haeckel and his whole nonsense about the embryos,
right?
You know, going through some evolutionary stage, and
yeah, that they recapitulate.
Yeah, and that was scientists in Germany, and it really led to this social Darwinism in Nazi Germany. And you know, Hitler is well documented that he believed in evolution.
Right, and you know, today some left wingers will try to say the Nazis were Christians.
Oh, of course,
which is so absurd. They outlawed Christmas in their public schools. You couldn't have a Christmas. You had to have a winter festival, winter solstice, winter heart, whatever.
Well, they're able to pull a few quotes from Hitler when he was campaigning, and you know where he said a few Christian things. I mean, that's. I hate to use a comparison, but, you know, like it's like Bill Clinton walking out of a church with a Bible.
5-pound Bible.
Yeah.
Who was the only one who could take a Bible to and from church and the media not criticize him because they knew he was just using it as a prop to deceive Christians to voting for him. So, okay, and you cannot condemn the 100 million human beings destroyed, murdered, slaughtered by socialist Darwinists in the 20th century. You cannot condemn that on the basis of atheism. on the basis of evolution. The murderers at Columbine said they were doing their duty by destroying the weaker organisms. They used Darwinism to justify, and so did the Soviets, and so did the Chinese, and so did the Germans.
That's right.
They are purifying the species by destroying the weaker. And the fact that they can destroy the weaker proves that the weaker are weaker. And so might makes right, and survival of the fittest. And so parents kill their children. This is all part of this godless worldview. And with the Crusades, where the Crusades were wrong, you can condemn their actions by the teachings of Christ. Jesus warned people about his followers. He said that many will come in my name and say, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. That's pretty bold for a religious leader to warn people of his own followers.
But didn't he also say many people will come and say, Lord, I did this in, you know, in your name?
Yeah.
And he's going to say, depart from me.
Depart from me. I never knew you. Yeah, that's intense. So anyway, that discussion, Fred, all comes from this one book review by Jerry Bergman out of the Creation Research Society Quarterly.
But it's good that it's shedding light on these myths that have been perpetrated through time, you know, on all these different topics.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've been having our Bobinert Live annual telethon to keep us on the radio broadcasting for another year on a 50,000-watt station here out of Denver, KLTT. And, Fred, I'd like to offer to the audience, you know, we're hoping that people will continue to give for this telethon so we could meet our goal of $25,000. But I'd like to offer a gift back. If someone gives and references this Real Science Friday program of $100 or more, we will give them a thank you subscription to Creation Magazine. And that's a great magazine.
It's a great magazine. It's great for both, laymen, scientists, and kids. And it's a great witnessing mm-hmm. tool. You go on an airplane, you bring one with you, and you wouldn't believe the conversations you get in.
Yeah, because it's so colorful,
people
glossy.
People love to talk about origins, too.
Yeah, people do love it. It's an easy way to bring people to discuss God.
Absolutely.
And people are in awe and wonder about the world around them. And so it's a great tool, and it builds your faith. It's just generally encouraging, and it's great to talk about with your kids and grandkids. And I think 1,000 times I've started conversations to share the Lord with people, starting with creation.
Yep.
Because that's where the Bible starts.
It's exactly where it starts, and that's why Satan loves to attack it.
Yeah, when people come to church or Bible study and they say, I forgot my Bible, I say, how could you possibly forget your Bible? It goes like this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void. And darkness was on the face. I mean, how could you forget your Bible? Thy word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against thee. And so if anyone gives $100 or more to the Bobinert Live telethon, then we will give you a thank you subscription to Creation Magazine. Or if you purchase the Science Pack, our Science Pack, oh, there are the neatest things. Fred, I don't know if you remember the things we give people in the Science Pack, but
fabulous
videos, literature, Unlocking the Mystery of Life DVD, one of the best DVDs ever produced.
Highly recommend.
The Privileged Planet, Astronomy in the Beginning by Dr. Walt Brown, The Age of the Earth Debate, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You were there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Downtown Denver against the Hugh Ross's Denver chapter, Reasons to Believe, and Genesis Creation, a Bible study I did on the book of Genesis and the creation chapters. So if you call us to give $100 or more, you can ask for either the Science Pack or just to give to the telethon, and then we'll give you a gift subscription of Creation Magazine. And, of course, if you can give $25, how badly we need that to meet our telethon goal to stay on the air. But then I hope you don't mind, we won't be able to afford to give you the subscription because it costs that much. But please, if you could, call us 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278, or you can give on our website at kgov.com, go into the store and donations, or to our specials, and you could click on the Science Pack, and you could write a comment when you make a donation. So thank you for that. Now, Fred, there's another book review in this Creation Research Society Quarterly, and it's about a book titled Where Darwin Meets the Bible. Where Darwin Meets the Bible. I thought, you know, there are some great science articles in here, but these book reviews have so much to talk through.
You can get out of, you can get quite a bit out of these book reviews. This one here is from a creationist named Larry Witham. Larry Witham. He's a Washington Times reporter who conducted over 200 interviews with scientists, philosophers, etc., related to the field of evolution.
Related to evolution, and where is the state of the theory? Where Darwin meets the Bible, because America has, you know, 100 million Christians and has more than 100 million people who call themselves Christians, but people go to church regularly and active. And I'd like to quote his assessment. So he interviews over 200 scientists and philosophers and so on. And this is what he says. I'd like to quote to you, Fred, from the beginning of the book and then the end of the book.
Okay.
Page 8 and then page 265. Page 8, Larry Witham says that the debate, the whole Darwinist debate, evolution, creation, evolution, it has now switched. It used to be defending the Bible. That's where the debate used to be, defending the Bible. It is now switched to making scientists defend the holes in the theory of evolution. That's a pretty good change in the battlefield.
Oh, it is, because, you know, evolutionists love to pit it as a battle against religion versus science. And now we're really exposing their science as religion.
And you know how they respond? When a scientist at a university says, I think Darwin has some holes in it, they fire him.
Oh, absolutely.
There is zero intellectual freedom. And this is true of Darwinist socialists. I mean, they're brutal. They're ruthless and brutal.
Oh, absolutely. And that reminds me of a movie coming up, Bob.
Oh, what movie? Yeah, that's right. Ben Stein.
Ben Stein. Yeah, that's going to be really good. Highly recommend this. Churches, get groups together and go watch this movie.
Let's Ben Stein, really the movie is called Expelled. He's a comedian, a dry humor kind of comedian, and he's a financial analyst. And he's got this movie coming out called Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. And, in fact, they interviewed Brian Rohrbaugh at his home. And that's why would they interview Brian Rohrbaugh, Columbine dad, for a movie exposing the intellectual dishonesty of Darwinism and their rejection of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of thought, freedom of expression. I mean, it's just this dogma that if you challenge the official dogma of the state, you will be fired, your career will be destroyed, you will be blacklisted. I mean, they are in fear. They're afraid of ideas.
Yeah, there's one scientist that calls it the big elephant in the room that no one's allowed to talk about.
Mm.
You know, it makes a lot of noise, it stinks,
it
throws things around, but you can't mention it's there. And what that is, it's design, it's intelligent design.
Right.
It's so overwhelming, the evidence is so powerful for it, but you can't talk about it because then you'll lose funding. Like you said, you can lose your job. I've got a friend, Bob Allen in Mississippi. He was one of the top students in his PhD program, and one of the professors saw him giving a talk on creation. So he spent the next couple months trying to convince Bob that creation's a myth and this and that. Well, Bob, you know, stood his ground, and he was drummed out of the PhD program. And he was, he said he was the top student at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing everything required of him.
That story is multiplied 1,000 times
around the country.
And the PhD astrophysicist who works for Ken Ham at Answers in Genesis, Jason Lyle, got his degree from CU up in Boulder. And he realized the only way I could get this degree is if I'm undercover.
Yeah, that's right.
I got to be undercover for all these years, because if they know that I'm a creationist, I'll be out of here.
And I tell you, Bob, the toughest question I get when I give my seminars is, what do you tell your kids when they go to college and they're in this situation where they want to get an advanced degree? Do you kind of
lie?
I
tell them lie. Just lie if you have to.
Well,
that's what I tell them as a Christian pastor. I really would. But no, what do you tell them, Frank? Well, you're more Christian than I am. Well, we're both Christian, but what do you tell them? How do you?
Well, that's a tough one, but what I tell them is I tell them both, there's two methods, and the one you just mentioned is they fly under the radar, and I'm not here, I'm not going to criticize that.
No,
it's a
strategy issue.
Yeah, they'll publish under a different pseudonym when they write articles, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there is another avenue that has worked. But it's a lot riskier, and Kurt Wise used it. He told his professors he was a creationist from the beginning, but he respected them, and mm-hmm. he wanted to be a good student, and he was one of Stephen Jay Gould's favorite students of all time.
Wow.
And as you know, Stephen Jay Gould was a committed
hardcore
Marxist and atheist evolutionist, but Kurt Wise took that approach, and that worked for him. Mm-hmm. So Gould respected him, knowing that all along that Kurt Wise was a young Earth creationist. So the other path works, but it's riskier. And if you're going to use that path to, show respect for authority.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
And when I, Fred, let me take my position back slightly. when I said lie. In the Bible, there's a number of times when people lie, and to lie in order to protect innocent life is
absolutely
valid. Yeah. Rahab and the Hebrew midwives, and God blessed them abundantly. And so, there are times when Christians lie.
And when a Nazi comes to your door,
are you hiding Jews?
Are you hiding a Jew?
And
if you say yes, then you pretty much murdered that Jew.
Right, the Holocaust.
And you're guilty of a sin. You should have lied.
Yeah, there are absolutely times when you lie. And when you're undercover, when you're doing an ambush against the Nazis or Muslim terrorists, then you deceive and lie. But no, there are times when you want to be wise and fly under the radar, be as wise as serpents and gentle as doves. And then there are other times when you say, you know what, I'm just going to be open and take the risk.
Yeah.
So you do either. It's a strategic question.
It is, absolutely.
You have to have a strategy about your career. So, Fred, thank you. Could we do this again next week?
Sounds great, Bob.
All right. So, Fred Williams is the webmaster for Creation Research Society Quarterly.
If I could quickly mention a seminar I'm giving tomorrow down in Highlands Ranch at Holy Cross Church. And if you want to go to youngearth.org to get details,
it's at
10 o'clock in the morning
from
10 to 11. Thanks.
All right. God bless you.